Hello and welcome to Simply Save, the personal finance podcast at Money Control. With me, I am Kaizad Adajania. You're listening to Season 3, brought to you by HDFC Mutual Fund. Now, this season is all about aspirations. If the rich and the famous can do it, why can't you and why shouldn't you? So we're talking about money matters that come with the rich and successful investors in ways and means by which all of us can emulate all of that. So in the previous episodes, we spoke about, you know, how to make best use of debt funds, some very successful habits of the rich and successful investors, and so on and so forth. Now today, I have with me a special guest. We have Pratik Pant, who is from Sanctum Wealth. And Pratik is going to talk about alternate investment and alternate asset classes. Hi Pratik, welcome to the show.
Hi Kezar, thanks for having me here.
Our pleasure. This is your first podcast?
Yes, this is my first podcast, and I'm quite intrigued by you know what's happening in this whole world.
Okay.
And podcast seems to be a very, very interesting way of reaching out
that
to a very
true.
Different audience.
That is true. So let's make the most of it. And we're going to have a good time.
Thanks, Kezar.
So Pratik, let's start off with the very basics. Most of us who have been investing our money all over these years, we talk about fixed income, we talk about PPF, we talk about bank fixed deposits. And if we want to scale ourselves up, we talk about equity funds. But today, there are a lot of other avenues, also a lot of other alternate asset classes. There are real estate investment trusts, there are infrastructure trusts, there is foreign equity investing. So do we really need to go beyond equity and debt, or like our fathers, or grandfathers, mothers, grandmothers have been investing in just equity and debt? Should we just stick to equity and debt?
So, you know, each asset class, Kezar, has a role to play. Right. When you talk about equities, it's about creating growth in your portfolio. It may have some level of volatility, but the whole idea is to generate longer term growth depending on what, you know, the growth of the country is.
Okay.
So there are some formulas which you can derive to decide
Correct.
What type of returns you would make over 10 years. But you will have a lot of volatility in between.
In between.
Right. When you talk about debt, classically, debt has been in a classical way about preserving capital.
Fixed it's income.
Absolutely,
income.
Right? It generates that type of regular income. It's about being able to protect your capital at any point of time, but still try and generate inflation plus 200 basis point type of returns.
Okay.
Right? Now, the combination of debt and equity is what people talk about from an asset allocation perspective. But then you also do have times like today, for example.
Okay.
Where, you know, you're facing problems in debt because there's a big credit crisis out there.
True.
A lot of companies are going bust, and, you know, you're not really sure where are you going to get the next bad news from. I mean, we're getting up every day in the morning
Correct.
And hear a new headline.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So it's not a very pleasant
Absolutely.
Thing. On the equity side, you've pretty much got everything wiped off.
Yeah.
Right. You've had mid-cap fund managers which are down. You've had large cap which has only seen 5 or 6
Correct.
Stocks do well.
Basically, all my SIPs are down.
Right. So when people are saying, listen, I'm losing money in debt, I'm losing money in equity, you know, what's really there? And that's where you have alternate, right? Alternate means things which are not debt and equity, finally.
Okay.
And you rightly said, right? You've got real estate, you've got international investing, you've got REITs which have come up, the real estate investment trust, you've got the investment trusts which have come up. Now, many of these vehicles have been created now. Gold has been the tradition. So gold and real estate traditionally have been alternate asset classes
Okay.
where people have said, irrespective of what happens in debt markets or equity markets, your gold and real estate will always give you steady returns or will hold or preserve value irrespective of the traditional asset class which is there. But interestingly, now you're getting a lot more opportunities to invest outside even gold and real estate.
Okay. So if the opportunities have come up, you're saying in the past few years, at least one can sort of take a look at that with an open mind and then evaluate whether each of these options could be had or could not, should not be had.
True, true. So the the starting of this was when even SEBI came up with these regulations around alternate investment funds, right? And it included categories like venture funds, startup funds, you know, funds which invested into a long shot type of a derivative strategy, which was there. It also included a lot of private equity funds and real estate funds. But those were, of course, meant for more sophisticated investors.
Correct. Meant for large investments.
Yeah, where your minimum ticket size was a crore rupees
so.
Plus.
Correct.
Right. So that was a more structured AIF alternate investment fund route to do that.
Correct.
But there's a lot more which can be done outside an AIF fund.
Correct.
And I guess that's what we want to talk about.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. So what we'll do is some of these assets that we have mentioned, let's break them down one by one. Let's start with gold, Prateek. You're right when you said that, you know, our ancestors have held gold one way or another, because, you know, that is one asset that they've really held close to their hearts. Now, of course, we are having gold in paper form. We're having sovereign gold funds, we're having gold mutual funds, we're having gold exchange traded funds also. Now, how should you make sense of, you know, how much gold do you need in your portfolio? Do you in fact need at all gold at all in your portfolio, or can you just do away with gold? Should you have physical gold? Should you have paper gold? I mean, what, we have a lot of millennial investors over here, right? I mean, so they want quick returns, they want fast returns, they want equity returns, but of course it's not something that they should be aspiring for all the time, because as you rightly said, markets can be up, markets can be down. So equity and debt is something that's naturally available to all our listeners. What about gold?
So, you know, gold, Kezad, is a very interesting asset, right? A lot of people, as you said, have held gold because they believed that, you know, irrespective of what happens, you know, gold never loses value.
Correct.
Right? So it's been a store of value. It's been a hedge against inflation. It's been something which people like wearing.
Yeah.
Right? So our theory around gold has been, you know, to investors specifically, that, you know, if you want to consume gold and you like what you wear, then gold is fine. But,
okay,
you know, trying to have too much of gold in your portfolio, because finally gold is not an income generating asset, right? It's not going to give you dividend.
Correct.
It's not going to give you interest coupon. Having said that, the recently launched sovereign gold bond schemes, which the government of India has come up with, is very, very interesting, because there you're getting a 2.5% coupon payout, plus your underlying value of gold is reflecting the market value of gold.
Okay.
Right. So we would actually recommend investors who are looking at a small investment into gold. Classically, our thing is that if everything is all right with the world and if risk assets are doing well, gold will tend to underperform.
Okay.
But if, you know, if there is a lot of uncertainty, which you're seeing today in the markets, that's the time gold really comes back in a big way.
Okay.
You know, the supply and demand equation for gold is, so large consumers for gold have really been India and China.
Okay.
While gold has actually been mined in Africa, right? And today on both sides, you're seeing, you talked about millennials, the demand for gold has actually come down quite dramatically.
Okay.
And these are, you know, this is not a seasonal change. I think some of these are trends which are there to stay, right? People are consuming less and less of gold, right? And whatever gold you want to do, that's why it's better to have it in physical format, because otherwise, your making charges, your breaking charges, your melting charges, all those things will never make gold viable.
Okay.
If you're using gold as an
investment vehicle
in a physical form.
But otherwise, if gold is not much of an investment on your horizon, and if you just want to wear gold and enjoy it, then you're saying it's better you stick to physical gold.
Absolutely. So while gold may have given near-term returns, I mean, I was looking at some data and gold is up, you know, almost 10% last 1 year.
Correct.
But if you look at last 5 years, like last 10 years, you made less than 5% returns on gold.
So it's not a return generating.
It's not a return generating asset class. Yeah, it's not a return generating asset class. It is best, even if some, as I said, if you want to take exposure, do it through sovereign gold bonds, which are available. And, you know, Government of India keeps coming with the series. You get a certain coupon payout on that.
Okay.
And you can have it as a very small, you know, up to 5% type of exposure.
Just as overall, a hedge
absolutely,
to your overall portfolio.
Absolutely. That's the role what gold would play.
Okay, cool, fantastic. Prateek, let's go over to real estate. Another favorite investment, or another favorite avenue for many of us Indians. Okay, traditionally, our parents and ancestors have had multiple real estate. That again has been changing now, right? I mean, real estate held its kind of, it was physical real estate more from our parents' point of view. But today, real estate investment trusts are also a reality. Of course, we haven't seen too many real estate investment trusts, but the regulations are around. And obviously, we're expected to see more and more instruments coming about. We've not had too much of experience with our existing real estate investment trusts around. But going forward, how should that be looked at from an investor's?
So, Kezad, you've hit the nail on the wall out there, right? Real estate has been traditionally the favorite. I mean, when we look at many of our client portfolios, historical portfolios, 60 to 70% of their wealth is in real estate.
Wow.
Right? How have people made money in India? It's been, you know, two ways. You've bought traditionally land, you bought a residential project which was getting launched somewhere, and you know, in a pre-launch you've bought it, and then at some point of time you decide you want to sell it,
yeah,
and you've doubled your money in 3 years. Land, you've basically doubled money, you know, every 2-3 years, and over 20 years your land price has gone up 10 times 20 times 100 times. There are many stories you hear,
yeah,
right, today,
yeah,
but you only hear the good stories, by the way.
Correct.
There are many stories now you will hear,
correct,
of, you know, builders who've not delivered, encroachment which has happened on those land parcels,
yeah,
right? And there is a lot of pain associated now with, you know, the traditional real estate investors which are there.
Okay.
But I think that's where the opportunity arises now. I guess the opportunity does not exist anymore in this primary residential real estate.
Okay.
You know, if for, from an investment perspective.
Okay.
The opportunity really continues to arrive in getting good, like we were talking about debt sometime back.
Hmm.
You can create a similar debt type structures where you invest into commercial real estate, and you mentioned about REITs.
Hmm.
So what is REITs really? You're pooling together,
hmm,
multiple commercial office buildings, hmm, in different locations,
hmm,
right? You sign agreements with tenants, which are good quality tenants, could be Fortune 500 companies,
hmm,
a lot of, you know, India is lucky, we have a lot of technology companies.
That's
here.
True.
We have a lot of outsourcing companies,
hmm,
here. So all those, so you're signing agreements with, yeah, those companies,
yeah,
you're pooling all those agreements,
hmm,
right, into a financial structure,
mm,
where these real estate investment trust companies buy these assets,
mm,
and get rentals in return,
mm,
right? So if you buy a good diversified pool of assets across different locations with good quality tenants,
yeah,
with yields of more than 8-10%,
mm,
right, that's where you get steady flow of income coming through these REITs,
okay,
which are there. They're very popular instruments in the US.
Okay.
Have been around for, you know, almost 4 or 5 decades. Very, very popular in Singapore and some of the other developed markets. You had the first REIT launched in India about 6 months back, roughly,
mm-hmm,
right? And that itself is now providing the basis of the market,
okay,
of this REITs. And so, we think over a period of time, you will see many more REITs, get launched.
So basically, you're taking clunky real estate properties and you're pooling them together and you're unitizing them,
yes,
and breaking it in them into small units to be easily digested by,
absolutely, and it's a trust structure,
a trust
in which
structure.
This is, so it's, yeah, like mutual funds, right,
yeah,
in mutual funds you buy equities,
yeah,
or debt,
correct,
here you're buying commercial real estate property,
and the added advantage is that it's regulated,
absolutely, it's completely regulated under SEBI,
okay,
because all these structures are regulated, mm, by SEBI,
yeah,
approvals have, mm, to be filed. You also have listing, which happens for REITs,
okay,
to provide secondary market liquidity.
Okay.
So all in all, I think it's a win-win situation,
okay,
when you have the, you know, a REITs type of a structure. Hopefully, you know, you are, over a period of time, you're going to see a lot of different types of REITs come in. You,
okay,
will have maybe REITs which only invest in student housing.
Okay.
You could have REITs which invests in co-living assets,
okay,
in co-working assets.
Okay.
And that's where you will again see different type of risk return profiles,
okay,
which will come about, okay, you know, this market is just about picking up Kezad,
okay,
right,
okay,
now.
And also, you know, the profile of investors who used to invest erstwhile in real estate, you had need to have big amount,
completely,
of cash and big amount of money at, with you. But today, even you know, the mass affluent, the average mass, maybe not the smallest retail investor, but it is the mass affluent can now take a look at when these assets are monetize or unitize rather, and you know, the minimum ticket size actually comes down to a more palatable level.
Completely, Kezad. If you had to buy an office space, let's say in Bombay, Delhi, any of the markets,
very,
right,
difficult.
You would require at least what, minimum 10 crores of,
yeah,
capital,
yeah,
right? And to buy a good commercial
quality
office,
yeah,
you require a few hundreds of crores,
yeah,
right, to do that. Today, at an IPO stage, you can come in with a 2 lakh rupees.
Correct.
And then subsequently a lakh of rupees.
Yeah.
Right? Once the listing happens. So it's really accessible, and it truly provides. So irrespective of what is happening today in the debt or the equity markets, this market is giving you a steady income flow.
Correct.
From the rentals which are getting accumulated from these commercial office
assets. Pratik, infrastructure trusts, like how you have real estate,
yes,
investment trust, infrastructure,
yes,
trust is also another asset class which has been created by our regulators and the government to enable the small investor, the mass affluent, to come and participate in the country's infrastructure building. The regulations are there, the products are there, few products. I'm not saying there are many products, but few products. But the experience hasn't so far been good. Now, I don't want to get into, you know, each individual product per se. But otherwise, where do you see infrastructure invest trusts as InvITs as a vehicle going ahead and finding their place in our portfolios?
Right. So, you know, the basic of REITs and InvITs is very similar, right? You've got an asset, which is an income generating asset.
Okay.
Right, which is bought into a trust structure.
Okay.
And then there are regular income flows which come from that asset.
Sounds very similar to what a mutual fund.
Absolutely, right?
Yeah.
Now, the difference between a REIT and an InvIT is that REITs typically invest into real estate assets, while InvITs are investing into infrastructure assets.
Correct.
Now, what are these infrastructure assets, right? You can have power plants, power projects.
Yeah.
You can have road projects.
Correct.
Right. You can have renewable energy projects.
Correct.
You can have, you know, many of these infrastructure assets which have a certain life.
Correct.
Which is there. The issue which happened with InvITs, I have seen the difference. In REITs, there's been a lot of education which has gone into educating investors about what the REIT asset is really about.
Okay.
It's much easier to, you know, for people to associate with a commercial office.
Correct.
Or a residential.
And we already had, our parents already had real estate in their portfolio.
Absolutely.
So we've seen real estate.
Yeah.
Infrastructure, power plants.
Yeah, so here, you know, you've had one road project which went, you know, which has toll payments which needs to happen. There is a power plant, you know, asset which was there, where again there were certain payoffs which needed to be there. Incidentally, the distribution from those assets have been very good.
Hmm.
So they've actually paid 12 to 13%, which is there. And you even found now certain larger institutional investors going and buying units from the market at significant discount to where it is listing. I think it'll just take some time for these markets to stabilize, Kezar.
Okay.
Right? And as people understand that this is not really, you know, IPO market list gain. But it's more a regular income generation.
Okay.
And you have good quality institutional investors who also come and back some of these assets.
Mm.
You would find, you know, regular type of interest which will come into this.
Okay.
The difference is one has to understand InvITs always has a life of an asset, right? Which is there. So there could be 25 years toll paying term for a road asset or the life of a power plant which is there. While in commercial, that life, you know, commercial assets are typically more appreciating assets, while, you know, infrastructure assets tend to be more depreciating.
So as you know, as you rightly said, you know, more amount of education is
absolutely
needed.
Absolutely.
So that people understand what these assets are, and then they don't there is no mismatch between expectation and what the product actually delivers.
Absolutely.
So all these put together, how much percentage of your overall portfolio should be there in these alternate assets?
See, we typically recommend anywhere between 10 to 20% of a client's portfolio into alternate assets. And they can be a mix of REITs, they could be a mix of gold, they could be a mix of overseas funds.
Yes, that's another alternate asset.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting space, right? Most of us believe that, you know, it's only the rich who can have investments in, and you need to open a broking account overseas.
Yeah.
You need to be, you know, trading, and, you know, it's very investing. You need $250,000 per year, which is your LRS limit to put money to that. But you have, at the last count, 39 mutual funds, which actually invest into overseas funds, which are there. So they are fund of fund structures, which is buying, you know, a US fund or a European fund or a Brazil fund or a Japan market or an emerging market basket.
Correct.
So you've actually done pretty well. And if I had to talk about it, like, US funds have probably had their best decade.
Mm.
They've outperformed the Indian markets by at least, you know, anywhere between 8 to 10% on a year-on-year basis. And also provide that level of diversification which are there.
But these are all past returns. So, I mean, of course, we're not telling you all to invest in these funds now.
Right.
But just you're giving an example of how these funds have performed over a period of time.
Yeah, the whole idea is diversification.
The whole idea is diversification.
Yeah, the idea is that, can you be in assets which are non-related, you know, correlated. So,
correct.
You're trying to, you know, put into uncorrelated asset classes.
So, if one year one should work, the other year something else should work.
Absolutely.
Third year something else
absolutely
should work.
So, it provides overall stability to your entire portfolio.
And it's quite marvelous to see that, you know, we use Google, we use Facebook, we use Apple, we use HP, Hewlett Packard, so many in our daily lives, you know. But you can actually invest in these
absolutely
companies sitting right here
absolutely
in India through a fund of funds or mutual funds which are available.
Yes.
And, you know, you don't need to sort of be a millionaire to be able to do that.
Yeah. So it's really this. And unfortunately, it's been the most undersold investment class in India. You know, okay. You just have less than 2,000 crores of rupees out of the, you know, 15 lakh crores of mutual funds,
yeah,
which are actually in international funds.
Correct.
So I do believe that, you know, most investors should take advantage.
Hmm.
You know, you don't need to see, typically when you otherwise filing your returns, you have to separately declare your overseas investment assets which are there or any other investments which you've done. In this case, this forms part of your domestic return filing itself.
Okay.
So there's a lot of convenience of using this fund of funds
okay.
on the international fund side to actually get that level of exposure.
Okay. So again, my earlier question, Prateek, how much percentage of your assets you're saying?
You can go as high as 20%,
okay.
but you could look at, you know, about 10%. And I think as REITs and international funds grow in size,
okay.
Those are the two areas we would really focus on. When
REITs
we talk
and
about
REITs
and international funds.
Okay.
Yeah, those are the two areas we would really focus on okay. when we talk about investing in alternate asset classes.
Okay.
Not so much gold.
Okay. Thank you so much, Prateek, for your valuable insights. That was really a good, stimulating conversation. And we got to learn so many things other than equities and debt, which most of us associate ourselves with.
Yeah. Thanks, Kezad.
And that's all from us in this edition, folks. And thank you for listening. Remember, mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully. And if you have any queries about our podcasts, you can write in to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. I repeat, it's mcpodcast@nw18.com. And for more news, views, and updates, stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.